It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Alex are all here. We've got lots to talk about. Apple is rebuilding Apple Maps from the ground up so they can compete better with Google. We'll talk about the problems and the perils of iOS and macOS betas and some of the good things, too. And Apple's plans for TV are becoming a little bit more clear. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 617, recorded Tuesday, July 3rd, 2018. I lost my car at the liquor store. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together with some of the best people in the Macintosh world to talk about the latest news from Apple. Renee Ritchie is taking a break from Pokemon Go and his massive quadruple raid scores. He's from imore.com and at Renee Ritchie on the Twitter. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Lee. We got flooded after Mac Break Weekly. Like, so many people friended us that I think our system went down.
You said there were a maximum of 200 friends. I thought, oh, yes. I've got 200.
Overnight.
So I'm sorry. Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
They don't know. That's the terrible thing is they don't know. It just sounds like we're ignoring them, which I hate. So we're not ignoring you.
Yeah, we're just maxed.
Leo, can I confess something? It's 105 degrees and 60% humidity in Canada, well, in Montreal right now, and I don't know what to do. I'm just sitting here melting.
I don't get it. Oh. I don't get it. It's either freezing and like you're snowed in. You need to move somewhere more temperate.
Yeah, for imperialistic fans, we went from minus 30 to plus 30 in just like a month and a half.
I don't get it. Also with us, Alex Lindsay, who has moved somewhere more temperate here.
Yes.
Although it looks like you got a little sun, my friend.
I've been taking advantage of the summer and being
nice.
You should.
The sun.
He's got a little. It's just right here, though. It's like the rest
of
the
You got a farmer tan.
Pale. Yeah.
Yeah. Farmer tan.
Just my head.
Just your head.
I just sit
neck,
by the window. I sit by the window.
Left arm.
Yeah, exactly.
Also with us from the New England area, Mister Andy Inatko at inatko.com.
Correct. Thank you.
Hello,
86
Andy.
Degrees. So we're our frigid neighbors to the south for Renee.
My mom, who's just up the road a piece from you, said I can't FaceTime today. It's so hot, I'm melting.
It's true.
Yeah,
and the devices get so hot.
This is the first day that I have the Vornado like floor upwards fan going because I would not be glowing. I would be perspiring and dripping onto the keyboard, causing all kinds of distress.
So, just in case you're wondering, it's a near perfect 67 degrees here in Nevada,
right.
California.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
It's tomorrow's Independence Day in the United States. Happy Canada Day, by the way,
oh,
Renee.
Thank you.
Sunday was
thank
Canada
you.
Day.
Yeah.
And then we follow with Independence Day on the 4th.
Happy Independence Day, July 1st for Rwanda.
And in Rwanda, yeah, they're celebrating also on Canada Day.
It was the only month warm enough for all of us to
I guess so. What are you doing for Independence Day?
We got some friends coming over. Nice. Just going to sit around.
You going to blow stuff up? Because
I am not.
I've heard your people like to blow things up.
I don't blow anything up anymore.
Uncle Four Finger Freddy?
Yeah, no. Yeah. You know, it's illegal to have fireworks in Marin County.
Oh, yeah. We can have
them
up here, though.
They have signs everywhere. Like every place they can put a sign that says... And there's a huge area of dry grass right below my house.
You couldn't have a worse place to have fireworks.
What about Skywalker Ranch? Don't they have lasers and blasters? And
lasers are okay.
Yeah, they only leave little marks, though. Yeah, that's, okay. That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Andy, what are you doing for the Independence Day for the 4th?
There's fireworks tonight, so I'm going to be out there shooting that. And then probably a diner breakfast tomorrow, followed by remembering of a happier day in America. That's all.
A diner breakfast is a happy day anytime.
Oh, yeah.
What does a diner breakfast include? I'm just starving. I'm desiring.
There's a special up the street that it's pancakes with whipped cream. So you got your with a strawberry. So you got your red, blueberries. So you got your blue and whipped cream. So you get your white. So I'm going to do so. Mm-hmm. And because it's about an 8,000 calorie load in one meal.
That's the meal.
Very, very much. God bless.
Independent cakes.
Freedom cakes. Freedom wow. Cakes. Red, white, and blue. Wow. That's awesome.
Probably once 4 hours after that, once I've had my nap, a trip to the beach, because it's going to be a good beach day.
We're going.
But we had to be submerged.
It is going to be a good beach day. It's not too bad here, but it's even cooler where we're going up the coast of Mendocino. It's going to be like 59 degrees tomorrow.
Where in Mendocino?
The town, Mendocino.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
I think. Yeah. I'll tell.
It's a big place.
Yeah, you're right. There's a big county.
Yeah.
But I'm going to stay away from the marijuana forests and just stay in town, probably. And I think Fort Bragg has a Mendocino rocket fuel thing.
I love Fort Bragg. That used to be like where Carlita and I used to go.
Mendocino is just a little tiny town. I think we're going to stay in town. It's great. It's going to be fun.
And Ulala. You'll drive through
Ulala.
Ulala.
Walala.
Walala.
Ulala. Ulala.
Something.
It's got a G in it somewhere.
Yeah. But you don't say it. It's silent.
Lake Okaboji.
Lake Okaboji. Apple, according to Matthew Panzerino, this felt a little bit like, I'm going to confess, a PR play here.
Second big exclusive for Panzerino in a row, Mac Pro and now Maps.
Yeah.
Way to go, Matt.
Yeah. He got invited, among others, to that special We Apologize.
No, last time like was
you,
just right? him.
You got invited.
The update for the Mac Pro was just him.
Oh, the update was just him.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. He wrote the article about how we brought in people, experts and creative types, and they're going to be. Yeah, that's right. Now he's talking about rebuilding Maps. But I would say you want to be a little careful at this point, Matthew, because you're becoming a publicity flack for Apple.
But it's weird because The Verge, like, and Dieter Bohn get all the Google, like, all the Android stuff the day before, and CNET has some, like, companies that always give – it seems like it's breaking up into, like, little
– fiefdoms.
Little digital fiefdoms, yeah.
Yeah. However, lots of interesting information here. Eddie Q brought him up to the campus, and they talked about what's going to happen in Maps. And, you know, and not surprising that Apple has decided that they don't want to rely on TomTom and OpenMap – open whatever it is, Maps.
OpenStreetMap.
OpenStreetMap to get their data. So they're collecting and have been collecting their own data. Now, they have to explain, and they do in great detail here, how they're getting data from you and where you go, but they're not getting data from your whole trip. Just not, they'll leave
Isn't
out the
clever?
Beginning and the end, and there's a little graphic
and they
in
take
here.
Random segments from the middle that are de-identified.
What this graphic does not tell you is how big these segments are, but okay. What Apple's saying is we're trying to anonymize this data and yet still get the thing that Google has, which is so valuable, which is direct data from people driving the route.
Yeah. The Waze model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's an interesting omission, too, because one of the most valuable pieces of information is where are the entrances and exits to a place. So that could be a piece of data that they're missing, depending on how they anonymize or interpret. We're not going to pay attention to the beginning or the end of your trip.
That's actually an important point. If you wanted to come to TWIT, there's really only one place that makes any sense in this big, long building, because anywhere else, you're going to go somewhere else. And so
they did address that, though. So they're only using the segments as probe data for traffic flow, construction, accident, stuff like that. All they want to know there is, are you going on a roadway they don't currently have in the system? And are you having to detour? For what they're calling access points, they're using both the satellite imagery, but they're using those Apple Maps vans, which are making those super high-def panoramas. And then they're employing hundreds of human editors to go in there and look at them and find the act. Because they were saying, like, sometimes it's around the street. Panzerino was on the talk show with Gruber a couple days ago as well, and he expounded on a lot of this. But they're saying, like, sometimes the address is a glamour address. It's because that's the street you want, but there's no door there. And the actual address is around the corner and 500 feet down. And they're using a combination of the vans, the high-definition satellite imagery, the point clouds, and then human editors to try to make sure that every one of those actual points of access are correct.
And you'll be happy to know that these vans use Apple gear. He says there's a surprising lack of bulky equipment inside. Instead, a Mac Pro bolted to the floor.
That's where they went.
That's where they are. Attached to an array of solid-state drives, a single USB cable goes up to the dashboard where the actual mapping capture software runs on a iPad. Wow.
Why wouldn't you?
It's a picture of it too. It looked pretty dope.
It'd be hard. It'd be hard to have a press tour if you had Linux boxes running in there.
Yeah, that's true. Here's the iPad with the mapping data and the single USB cable.
I think that one of the things that we've been talking a lot about the fact that when we talk about like net neutrality and so on and so forth, one of the things that's going to be really important is location services. And Apple and Google are pretty much closing that up. You know, there's not going to be, you know, one of the things that I think that cities need to start thinking about is that something that they should be gathering, you know, that data, and then licensing it back to developers so that you can have an enormous amount of data as a developer that isn't Apple or Google.
I have qualms about this. Cities do this right now with mass transit, right? And they try to make money on it. In fact, they sometimes don't give it to third parties, but still try to sell their own mass transit apps. And I feel like that's the
which
city.
Which are terrible, usually.
Which are terrible. Yeah. I feel like that should be, if anything is open source data, the city should gather.
The problem is that it's extremely expensive to gather.
It's expensive to gather
and to maintain it.
Figure out a way to monetize, obviously.
I think that they shouldn't try to build their own apps. I think that what they need to do is build a common framework that allows other people to use them at a relatively inexpensive, and that relatively inexpensive could be, you know, differing. You know, for instance, if you did something, let's say at the Moscone Center, and you say mapped out the entire thing with all the data that you needed, you could probably charge every company that comes in there $25,000 for the license for this year to use it, because the amount it would save them would be, you know, they can't do it. It's like it would be impossible for them to execute. Because the hardest part about this is not only gathering that data, but maintaining it, you know, and so you do want to pay for it. You need to figure out what the reasonable number is, but you don't want it to be another government service that isn't being, doesn't have a fiscal, you know, connection.
I guess that's true.
Otherwise, you're going to pay for it in taxes.
I guess that's true.
You want it, the people
we're already
it pay
paying
for it.
For it, if you ask me, in taxes. And
well, not if you, I mean, there are definitely, double dipping it out. There are definitely parts of cities that are not being paid for by the taxpayers. They're being paid for, like when you talk about zoning and talk about a lot of those things, those departments are being paid for by your fees. You know, like if you're doing
as
those,
it should
and that's,
be.
And that's the way it should
well,
be.
Well, that's a
what
tax. A fee is a tax.
Well, it is, but I mean, it's a fee. But it's not a general tax going
tax.
Across everything. Right. It is for the people who are using it.
And if the city is doing road work, they have that information. They're collecting that information in some
way. They're collecting an enormous amount of information. Right. You know?
What's super interesting to me in all this is that Google, there used to be two mapping companies. There was Navtech and there was TeleAtlas. And TeleAtlas became TomTom. And Navtech was Nokia here. And then it got sold to a bunch of car companies. But Google used to license their data. Then they redrove the world and made a better Google Maps. And Apple used to license their data. And now they're redriving the world, trying to make a better mapping solution. And for them, better means more private. Amazon, no doubt, maps a lot of stuff. Facebook hired the guy who used to run Apple Maps years ago, and they have so much user location information, and we still haven't seen any products from them.
Right. Well, just to point out how long and arduous this process is, Apple will put this information into maps starting in the fall with iOS 12, and it will cover all of San Francisco and the Bay Area.
It started today. It started rolling out in San Francisco this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, Northern California by fall. So at that rate, it's going to take them a little while to get the world.
All of the U.S. within 1 year, they said.
Yeah.
Which is still a slow pace.
But that also points out like the global problem of this. There are a lot of cities and even countries where you just can't. The roads aren't necessarily drivable. The government is not necessarily keeping a database of their own, and so you really do have to algorithmically figure out by flow of people, by satellite imagery, by 3D imagery, calculate where streets actually are. So that's why that's the difference between the big two, or even the big one, let's say Google Maps, and the other ones are trying to catch up. When you go to these very, very rural areas where every single tiny 800-year-old, 500-year-old, 400-year-old street is actually mapped out versus it being a complete dead zone. All you see is the street that was actually paved 30 years ago on other map systems. So it's a non-trivial problem. Whenever I see a lot of people writing about how like Google or other companies should be broken up and they should be able to share maps, there's a problem where Google and another company might have the majority of all the map services. Well, that's because mapping is really, really hard, and it's really, really expensive. It's going to take you a decade. You have to start, like, the best time to start a mapping service is about 15 years ago, and if you haven't, well, there's not much you can do. Well,
and in a lot of the countries, especially in smaller cities, it is I was talking to someone who actually contracts some of this. And it's a boom for the people who got into it. Like Eastern Europe, these guys are, you know, they have little location data, and and so on and so forth. And you know, these guys make, you know, suddenly were, they were doing like little bits and bobs in Eastern Europe, and suddenly they're making millions because, you know, because someone, you know, beat some of these big companies, not necessarily Apple and Google, but other companies that all want mapping data, and they sell it to each one of them at a, at, you know, it's the same data that they just keep on parceling out and selling to different folks.
Point out
in.
Though, that it's not a, it's a lifetime commitment because it's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You're never done.
Yep.
You got to
yep.
keep doing it. So, Apple's essentially saying this is a high priority for them. There's another piece to this puzzle. If you're going to do anything with self-driving cars, you have to have good maps, right?
And augmented reality. And what they're doing that's so interesting is they're not just making panoramas, because everybody says we want street view, and they are doing the panoramas for street view, but they're taking point clouds, which are three-dimensional measurements of everything in the surrounding, 360 degrees and up. And that means you could build in autonomous technology because it would have, it's like prefetching data. You don't want to, you physically, you cannot, at least with our current computing capacity, you cannot do everything live and everything in real time. You have to have a huge amount of prefetched data. But also, if you want to start layering augmentation and enhancements on the real world, you need to know as much about that world as possible. And a huge part of AR is ingesting the world around you. And they're loading all this up that goes into those Macs, goes into the SDs, goes to the server center. They de-anonymize it. They anonymize it so there's no faces or licenses. And then they start building these models for everything.
Well, and they're using, typically they're using flash LiDAR for a lot of that. There's a little, they look like little circles that are on the corners, and that's a, those are Velodyne is probably the company that suddenly made a lot of money doing this for the car, both the cars and the gathering. That data, you know, what a lot of what they're doing there is also like really making sure they know exactly where you are. So the GPS gets you plus or minus 10 meters or, you know, it can get a little bit better than that, but you know, and a lot of other things will help you tighten it. But what, by then using basically a hashed version of the image recognition of the 3D information. They're not using all the information because that'd be too heavy, but a hashed version of it, they can quickly figure out precisely down to the, you know, millimeters of where your vehicle is, which is obviously important for them to figure it out. People will argue that you don't necessarily to drive, you don't necessarily need that data, that AR data, because it's just reacting to what's around it, but to know where it's going or know where to go, you know, to know where to go next, it needs to have, you know, all that data, but it's the actual driving component is partially connected to what it thinks should happen, but it's also very connected to it responding or not responding in the case of the Arizona case to the data that's coming to it.
Renee, how would you know if your maps were updated? I mean, I'm using iOS 12. By the way, we'll get to this in a second. I want to put a kind of a stop sign on people who are starting to install the public beta, and we'll talk about that in just a second, of either iOS 12 or Mojave. But how would I know if I have iOS 12, I'm in the Bay Area, how would I know that now it's using its own data? It still says TomTom and other data providers in the copyright information.
We lost Renee briefly.
It's
going to continue to as well. Renee. I mean, it's not going to...
It's not going to go away.
Oh, no. They're going to continue to license all of this. They're going to continue. I don't think anybody, I don't think they're even licensing any less than anyone else. They're simply adding all of these other services on top of what they.
Panzerino says something I'm not sure is quite true. He says that the only company that owns the entire map stack is Google. Apple wants to be the other one. Is it only Google that owns the map stack from the ground up? Aren't other companies, isn't Mercedes-Benz and Audi and the
none of that?
They're not doing this kind of mapping.
Not at the level of detail that we're talking about, where you know everything about what's there. I mean, for the driving, for the cars, they need their. It's they are very dependent on the moment. You know, being able to scan the moment and understand what's going on in that moment. They need some of the map data to get around, but it's not a. So that's where a lot.
They also have cars driving around that they could. Presumably get map data from.
Well, theoretically, if you had enough cars using enough self-driving cars, your maps will get better over time.
Right.
You know, so that all those cars, you know, a Google process of this will be that when Waymo has, you know, 50,000 cars out there, they're going to not only be driving around, but they're going to be continually mapping and remapping and
Is Tesla doing that?
I'm sure that a lot of them are thinking about it. I don't know if they're, you know, but a lot of them are going to continue to use the LiDAR data that they're using to drive to continue to resolve the areas that people are driving in. It's, but you can't do that until they're out there.
Right.
And also, there's a hell of a lot of data in all the captures they're doing. Google is making sure that they're capturing also street signs so that they know what the traffic laws are. They're capturing where the public utility services are. As far as I know, as of a couple of years ago, they're capturing enough data to actually derive a point cloud from where they're going, from the areas they're going through, which is one of the reasons why when you go to 3D view and maps, it's just such a detailed thing, because they've been collecting that forever and ever and ever. So it's like I said, it's a hard thing to do. I still remember talking to one provider that said that we have to send cars to every single hospital so that we know exactly where the emergency room entrance is, as opposed to where the parking structure is, because we have to understand the context of why are they asking us where's the nearest hospital. If they're essentially saying we're visiting a friend, we need to make sure we guide them to the parking structure. But if there's an emergency, we have to make sure we get them exactly to the emergency room entrance. So I, that's why data.
There are few companies that have the scope to do this properly. And Google started doing this 10 years ago.
And I think that we're fortunate that Apple decided to get into the mix, because Google's been doing a great job, but the arms race between them is going to, we're all going to benefit.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Do we know if they're going to use the duplex technology for like traffic yelling? Like, you can't park here. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, that'd be fantastic.
And Alex is right, because it's not just Apple and Google competing to collect the best data, but the companies that create the LiDARs and create those sensors, now that there are multiple people who are buying that equipment, that is also spurring them to have the best, the most accurate detail, the highest refresh rate, the lowest profile on the vehicle, to such an extent where at some point you could actually foresee a future in which recently they've legislated that every new car has to have a backup camera now. What would have been a most ridiculous and wonderful feature for luxury cars 5 or 10 years ago, now it's going to be a standard feature. They could get the LiDARs so small that essentially every car traveling is also remapping its environment and contributing that to a public database. That could happen in the next 5 or 10 years because of how there's no longer a station wagon with essentially the robot from Lost in Space bolted to the top of it. Now it's actually, maybe you think that this person has a roof rack for a kayak but no kayak on it, but actually it's this very, very sophisticated data collection device.
I also love how Apple said they wanted to remove cognitive load by doing all this, because they wanted to make sure you never have to worry which lane to be in. And they're doing things like matching the typography and design of the street signs on a city by city basis, so you'll just recognize your local street signs. Everything they possibly can do to make the driving experience the least stressful possible.
That's where Apple really excels, right?
Yeah.
So I was asking Renee before we lost you,
To the new Skype, Leo. Like, as I was talking, it shut down and updated to the new Skype.
Don't get me started on Skype. One of the things you'll note in the new Skype is they apparently have taken out gain control of any kind. So
I believe it's an Electron app.
Let Skype do it. It is an Electron app. Yeah, among other problems. So I was asking, how you said you have the new map data in the beta, the iOS beta. How do you know that? I don't see it anywhere.
I was looking at Reddit, and they started getting really excited as it started rolling out in San Francisco. So presumably starting in San Francisco and...
Check Reddit.
And now, like, and we'll see, and it should reach the Bay Area within this week.
This is one of the things I love about Reddit, is there's always somebody who's like the most avid fanatic of all who can figure this out.
It's crowdsourcing and it's purist.
The ultimate in... All right, so that's good to know. But again, it's going to take a while before it comes to a city near you.
Pictures that Panzer had were all Fort Bragg, so maybe you'll see them over the...
Oh, were they? Funny. That's where I'm going for the 4th. I didn't notice that. There's one in Cupertino. Cupertino demo. Let's scroll up here. And that's...
Those are the old maps.
That's the old stuff. Yeah. All right.
A little bit further down.
Yeah, I see.
And it should be a side-by-side comparison as well.
Oh, nice. Okay, that's Cupertino also. Here you go.
Fort Bragg.
Well, that's right where I'm going to see the fireworks, right there.
Google always had all these trails and all these the forests and everything like that, and Apple hasn't. So now Apple's finally getting all that stuff integrated.
We're going to, if you want to come visit, we're going to be at Glass Beach for the fireworks. Look, we got a tent. cool. That's really cool. I think Alex made the exactly right point, which is we should encourage this because the competition is good for everybody. We'll get better maps. We'll get better choices. I use Apple Maps.
It's good options, yeah, because like some people don't like Waze just because they don't like the idea of sharing their location. And if they have an alternative, and maybe it's not as good as Waze, but maybe it's private, and that means more to them than the, you know, so it's nice to have different options and different business models and different providers and all the different things that go into it.
Is it always going to, I think it is always going to be the case that private means a little bit less complete?
Well, I think that the question is when does it get to a point where the difference is minute? I mean, Apple has the money to spend, yeah, exactly, where they can get to the point where, you know, is 95 or 90% as good enough to make it to a point where you're,
or does it take
you're
longer,
getting privacy
not,
in the back.
Not less, but it's longer.
Also, we don't want to get lulled into the thing where just culturally we simply accept that the only way to get the best possible results is to give up some of our privacy.
It doesn't have to be that way. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way. That's a danger. We have to make sure that we always have the ability to, when you borrow someone's iPhone, you realize that, oh, well, actually, this navigation app got me there just fine. And didn't they keep hammering on at Apple about how they're not collecting any personal data? Isn't that interesting?
Well, you know, it's less convenient
that
to
also
get into
that also puts pressure on Google and other makers to put the accent on privacy whenever they can.
And it's less convenient to get into your house when there's a lock, but it's still useful.
I don't know if you saw the email story yesterday about the companies that were just reading people's emails who signed up for their services.
Yeah.
We talked about that kind of stuff.
We talked about that. I have to say that is a very typical Wall Street Journal hit piece. Wall Street Journal has, there's no love lost for Google at all. And they
well, that wasn't Google though. That was Yahoo, and it was any free mail account that you signed up.
Bogus piece to me, because if you sign up for something to read your email, you can't really be surprised that it's reading your email.
I think so. I agree with you completely, but I think there's always a difference. It's like when we found out that Uber was like monitoring celebrities, or that the NSA was like trying to stalk their ex-girlfriends. It's like, do your job, but don't ever go beyond the scope of your job.
Well, I don't. I think, despite all of this, attempt to scary hackers in dark closets looking at your email, that's not what they're asserting. They're just saying, look at these programs. Little alert to everybody. If you have an anti-spam feature, it has to look at your email. If you have a suggested reply, it has to look at your email. Google in June of last year said, we're not going to look at email for ads anymore, but they still look at your email. Yeah. If you sign up for a service that looks for receipts to see if you overpaid for something, it's reading your email. Obviously, right? Now, Unroll.me got in a little trouble. And I think that Google is policing this and absolutely needs to continue to police it to make sure that companies don't overstep their bounds, but you're basically giving them permission to read all of your email. Why would you be surprised that it's reading all of your email?
Because we're expecting that it's going to read our email within the limits of features that are going to help us personally. That this is, we feel as though this is the deal that we signed when we click through that agreement that we never actually read. It's when we find out that actually you're letting every person who uses this API also get a list of my friends and then use that for any purpose that they want, that we feel as though we should have been informed about this. We feel like we're being kind of rooked. And if this happens too much with a certain company, we start to feel as though Facebook, oh wait, did I say a specific name? Oh wait, that was a total mistake. Maybe this company really doesn't care about this, and maybe I should start to limit my associations with this company.
Right.
Yeah, it's when it's programmatic, it's not a problem. When people can just randomly do it for jokes and chuckles, I think we get
upset. Well, and that's the other, I mean, they kind of imply that that's what's happening. But in the two cases that they refer to, human teams were hired to train the computers. Yeah. Because the computers weren't doing a very good job of determining what was personal and what was not. I don't find that problematic either. It's worth alerting people, but yeah. I feel like this was the Wall Street Journal saying, I mean, what was the headline? It was something really incendiary. I don't have it in front of me, but I feel like this is the journal and perhaps overblown.
It's the same thing
with
security. Like, be informed, but don't have your attention stolen through sensationalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this is also something that is part of the education process that we need to take part in, particularly with machine learning. Machine learning, a component of it is learning. You have to keep exposing this system to data. And part of the learning process is every time that the machine learning model screws up, it usually gets kicked back to a human being who looks at that data and points out, okay, this is right, this is wrong. A, to give the result that the user wants, but also to teach the model that this is what you should have done in this situation.
I would be less bothered by this if it wasn't a continued problem with Wall Street Journal stories about Google products. Sure. Text dirty secrets. The app developers sifting through your Gmail. Software developers scan hundreds of millions of emails of users who sign up for email-based services.
Well, I was just shocked they didn't get Apple in the title, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, although, you know, these headlines like this are what keep Renee and I on radio.
I understand. But the internet giant, Google, right, continues to let hundreds of outside software developers scan the inboxes of millions of Gmail users who signed up for email-based services. Well, yeah.
Dum, dum, dum.
Okay.
Just be informed. Be informed. Be informed of what you're doing. It makes smart choices.
And it doesn't mean you have to read in great detail the privacy agreement. It wouldn't be a bad thing, but you don't have to. If you sign up for something that says we're going to look at your email, like I use TripIt. The only thing I use for this is TripIt, because actually I stopped using Gmail as my main email for other reasons. So TripIt, now I actually have to explicitly email stuff to them if I want them to see my travel plans. And so that's fine. I immediately, as soon as I read about Unroll Me reading other stuff and sending it to Uber, I agree that was overstating, I was doing a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I immediately unenrolled Unroll Me, but
it's like we've said often, it's all about the transaction. I feel like I've always understood what the transaction is, for instance, with Gmail, which is why that I use it. I have Gmail addresses for certain very functional practices, but when it comes to my actual work, things that are personal, things that are work related, things that are real, for lack of a better word, I don't use Gmail for that. I never have and never would. Yeah. It's always a server that I actually control that I can trust a little bit better.
Right. And if Microsoft used to do those ads with Gmail Man, a human reading your email, which was, I found, very offensive. And but of course, they have to do the same thing, because any company that offers anti-spam protection in an email service is reading your email. All right, let's talk about the betas, because I know a lot of people are probably very tempted by the public betas of iOS 12 and Mojave and tvOS. I tried to put Mojave on my iMac Pro, and the install, for whatever reason, froze, forcing me to reinstall High Sierra on my iMac Pro. I learned my lesson. I don't think that's why. I don't think that's widespread, but it's just that's what we keep saying. It's that you shouldn't do this on a production machine. iOS 12 is one of the problems I've had with iOS 12 is. That feature that keeps an eye on how, your screen time.
Yes.
I had screen time turned on. Not the downtime is what I'm talking about. I had downtime turned on. Set a schedule for time away from the screen. During downtime, only apps you choose to allow and phone calls will be available. And I found there was a significant delay when downtime was being turned off programmatically at 9 a.m. that my whole iPhone was unusable for about 30 seconds or a minute.
I had a different problem in that I couldn't turn it off. It was just always on. And it turns out that because I set the password on my iPad, even though it made it look like I could turn it off on my other devices, I couldn't.
Oh,
I had to remember to go back to my iPad and turn it off.
So these will all be ironed out, of course, by the time they release this in the fall. But just, it's a word of warning.
By the time 12.4 comes out, Leo, it'll be so smooth.
Yeah. I guess the developer beta 3 is out today.
Yeah,
but if you're in the public beta, you don't get all of those updates, right?
You'll get it. It's usually a couple days later in the week, and it'll be called public beta 3 because they're generally a beta behind the developers.
It doesn't say when I'm looking at software update, it doesn't say anything but iOS 12.0. So
if you look at your about, it'll give you the build. So I'm running.
There you go. Go to the about.
General about, and then I am running. I'm running beta 3, the one from today, and it's 16A5318D.
Where would I find that?
There's your problem.
Version 16A5308E. Isn't that the same one?
That's are you on the public beta or the developer beta?
I'm on the public beta, 5308E.
A different one.
Okay.
I'm on 18.
So you're 10 later.
Did you notice they changed all the code names this year?
No.
They used to follow patterns. Like iOS was always ski hills and watchOS was beaches and macOS was apples for the last few years. Before that, it was wines. And now iOS is peace. macOS is liberty. WatchOS is glory. Wow. And tvOS is hope.
Very patriotic.
making Apple great again.
Apple is great.
Yeah, exactly. God help us if next year the codenames are Make America Great and Again.
Although I think
Cook has been a little bit too close to the White House.
Instead of themes for every OS, I wonder if they're doing themes for every year now.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Paul, is Mojave, you have a good article on the public beta at imore.com on Mojave. Is it fairly, was my experience, Laurie Gill wrote it, is it my experience unusual or?
Yeah, I've put it on 3 machines and it was fine on all of them. I put it on the iMac Pro and I put it on a MacBook Pro and a MacBook and it's working.
I wonder, I have a lot of drives hanging off of the iMac Pro, including a Drobo. I wonder if some of that.
I know when I do updates, I disconnect everything.
I should disconnect all the USB stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, that's my gut feeling about that.
I had a scare with WatchOS. It never finished installing, and then I rebooted it, and it's been fine. So
How'd you get? Oh, you're a developer. Developers can get WatchOS.
Developer beta,
Okay. I'm excited about WatchOS. Is walkie-talkie on your watch now?
Yes. I was walkie-talkieing with Trinity Caldwell the other day.
Oh,
it's
how does
very
it work?
Strange. It's like push-to-talk. You press the button, you say what you're going to say, and then they get it, and then they push the button and say what they want to say. It's like walkie-talkie or that Sprint Nextel stuff they used to show you on TV.
Right,
yeah,
right.
But is it live or is it sending a file?
It's basically, it uses FaceTime. So basically, as you speak, it opens up a FaceTime session between you, encrypts the audio, sends it to the source, de-encrypts it, plays it, and then you can respond or...
Oh, interesting.
Break it on, yeah.
Oh, interesting. All right.
But so, anywhere in the world.
As long as you're both connected to the internet, it should work anywhere, yeah.
Nice. And it's not, but it's not like a party line. It's just point to point, right?
Yeah, point to point.
Can you only have one person or can you have other people?
It's only one to one. Like, you can have as many people as you want, but you only talk to one to one at a time. So you can't use it for like Disney family trips yet.
Right. But if you walkie-talkie Serenity, could you then walkie-talkie somebody else?
Not at the same time. I could do it serially, but not. There's
no, I know it wouldn't be simultaneous, but could you then say, okay, now walkie-talkie Leo?
I flip to the new car, walkie-talkie Leo, flip back to Serenity, walkie-talkie Serenity.
Okay, that's good.
But then Leo would be asking questions for Serenity, and you'd be like, wait.
It might be confusing,
Serenity, and then you go back and ask Leo, Serenity.
Bunch of asynchronous conversations.
Yeah. Do you just hear the voice just comes in without you asking for it, or?
You set yourself on. You have to set your status to available, and then you can receive these things, and it'll say Serenity's connecting, and you can say always or this time. Or
does it do before it starts talking? And
well, I have sound turned off, so I don't know if it does or not. I have to find out. That'd be
that
great.
That was the most annoying thing about the Nextel phones.
Nextel phones.
And you'd hear people like, you know, block away.
That was the worst part of the events. So we'd work at events, you know, big events at large conference centers, and they would just hand out hundreds of these things. And you hear this.
And I have to apologize to everybody listening to the show. I just ruined your day. I'm sorry.
That's the first time I was not timid about explaining in no indirect terms to somebody what the quiet car on Amtrak is for. You can't use your cell phone. You gosh darn cannot use a push to talk that keeps making burping noises.
I could see using this with Lisa, my wife, but of course she doesn't wear an Apple Watch, so I won't.
And kind of when we talk about augmented, I was really thinking about it after the last show. I was really thinking about the fact that when we think about augmented reality, the thing that's probably going to get augmented faster is going to be our ears.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, where we're going to be, I think we're not very far away with some of us starting to have, putting basically hearing aids, quote unquote, you know, into our ears and leaving them there all day. And really, you know, that they, if something loud comes by, it blocks it. If we want to hear a little bit more, it'll extenuate it. But also it's just like a general, we're in communication with whoever we want to be in communication with. We're getting information. We're getting, you have that
your
person.
Assistant is in your ears, like the movie Her.
But when you think about it, like with augmented reality, when it pops up and it goes, you know, when you look at this person, it goes, that's Sam. Hi, Sam. He goes, he's got 3 kids. One's going to, you know, like, little extra.
No, Alex, why are you reading my fake Facebook profile to me? Oh, no reason.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And since we've seen a couple of different companies that are like, during Google I/O, one of the most really interesting parts of the accessibility talk that they gave, I think it was on Thursday or something, is the idea of here is like a just a lanyard case to wear around your neck so that the phone camera, you're wearing your phone around your neck and the camera side is out, so it's really giving you descriptive text to what is actually around you based on what it's seeing through the camera lens. So if you combine this with let's say a Motorola, I can't remember the name of the product, but Motorola had a really good single Bluetooth earpiece that is almost, it wasn't like a hearing aid, but it was almost invisible, and it also had a tap portion to it, so you can actually just tap and then talk to Google Assistant to get answers and make things happen, and would actually, of course, give you things inside your ear. Imagine those two connected to each other and being able to say that the camera identifies a person ahead of you, and then the earpiece simply whispers that name in your ear, or you're walking along and you don't necessarily have to be holding up a phone to get the augmented reality, but because of the data that's coming in from the camera, your earpiece can say, turn left. You see a Starbucks up ahead. Well, the street is right past that Starbucks on the left.
Well, and also, this kind of comfortable, like I watch how comfortable my kids are with Alexa, you know, and the thing, what's interesting is that they're constantly just asking questions. You know, they'll be sitting there, like if something comes up, if they're talking about something like, how far is this? They'll just say the word and ask the question and move forward. And I think that's just they're so comfortable with it. And I can imagine, again, just having this all the time, but what's the temperature outside? Or is it going to rain today? Or is it going to, and just having this kind of, rather than this like lift my watch or go to my phone or whatever, you're just kind of just constantly in this kind
it's of conversation. The next generation of Echo Siri / Google Assistant.
One of the cool things with the AirPods is they now support, I think with the beta, they now support Yo Shlomo without you having to touch them first. So you can just talk to them. And there was this awesome app at WWDC. I'm blanking on the name. The guy made an app. Originally, it was just for guided running, but it's been used by the accessibility community now. And people who haven't been able to jog or to walk outside in years are now putting in AirPods, firing up this app. I think it runs on the watch. So you don't even have to have a phone with you. And it just tells them, turn left here, turn right here, go down here, go there. And they're out running and walking and having a blast. And that's entirely an augmented reality experience.
I haven't done the review yet. These things called IQ Buds, which is a new kind of earbud, but designed really to replace hearing aids. So you put it in your ear and it does an audiometric hearing assessment, calibrates it to your hearing profile. Then you can, and it has an iPhone app. Then you can wear it. You can hear better, but you can also, it has Siri and Google Assistant built in. This is, we're getting very close. Yeah. I have from Jabra, they make some, the Jabra Elite Sport Buds that have VO2 max. They have heart rate. I can't remember if they have blood pressure, but they have a lot of metrics that they get. So what we're not seeing is one device that does that all, but at some point we're going to see that.
Well, and if you look at the patents that Apple's put out, I mean, Apple's thinking about it pretty hard. And I have
the glasses, the ears, the watch.
The AirPods have like transformed my workout because I just, you know, it's somewhere in my garage is my phone. Like it's just sitting somewhere there and you're just kind of wandering around and working out and it's just this, you know, that disconnection of it and that whole process. That's the only place I really have a good preview of it because it's the only place I have my headphones on all the time except when I'm,
right.
That's the only time I'm really listening to them.
These new buds, by the way, which is interesting, claim a 20-hour battery life.
Well, and that's the big thing that has to change. You know, that's the thing that's going to make the difference is when you can leave
them
in.
All day.
Of course, we're going to find out that they cause cancer and, you know, it'll...
Cancer schmancer. At least I'll be able to hear what's going on.
It's not any worse than the corn. And
they also claim high-fidelity audio. So that's one thing you don't get with hearing aids. Hearing aids amplify the human voice, but they don't improve your hearing of anything outside of that.
Well, and it's funny, they amplify certain people's hearing. You know, like I walk.
Yeah, if you have a screechy voice, man, it's loud.
but when my grandmother was 94, she had her hearing aids. She could hear me perfectly. Like I just have a conversation, everyone's like, "Oh, you got to really speak up," and I was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." But it just turned out my voice
frequency
was like what it picked up, and so she could hear me perfectly. And then my sister would come in, and she couldn't understand anything she was saying.
Oh yeah,
saying.
Your sister talked like this. Well,
One of the funnest and freakiest nights I've ever had was remember Studs Terkel, the wonderful essayist
love
writer.
Studs Terkel, yeah.
Okay, so
I used to always have a cigar in his mouth and he talked like this.
exactly. And it was, as you should say, I'm just deaf as a post. And so he was interviewed on stage in Chicago by Roger Ebert. And so, like, there's not everyone was like sort of milling about in the lobby, and Studs was hanging out and holding court. And for some reason, just like Alex said, like, my voice was like exactly the right tone and timbre for him to hear. I'm deaf as a post. If you could just stick nearby and just speak things to me. And so
in a heartbeat.
And so it was wonderful to stand there for an hour and a half and hear. Now, Studs, now, you're not going to remember, but you interviewed my mother. Imagine for this person, and then hearing this person, they have no idea, this, like, you know, 33-year-old said, Studs, you probably don't remember. She says you probably don't remember, but you interviewed her mother. Oh, yeah, your mother was Gloria. And she's like, was I like the Svengali, like, influence who was like simultaneously translating?
I love that. Oh, man. Well, that's what these things would do, right? These things will tune themselves to your hearing. You'll be able to hear the world better. I have them. I haven't yet played with them, but I will have a review for you by next week. So I'll let you know.
I really do like this idea of what is human society going to prefer to integrate? The idea of having an earbud that you really have to look in order to see that someone is getting some sort of assistance, or are they going to prefer this idea where we're going to integrate actually looking at a screen so that, yes, I'm looking for information, but there's part of the social language that we're using is that I am lifting up my watch to look at something, or I am lifting up my phone to look at something. It's more explicit. Would they rather have that seamless experience, or would they rather have, again, part of that sort of language that I'm looking up something right now, but I'm not trying to hide it or not trying to, you don't have to wonder whether this is actual recall or whether this is information that's coming by. I'm already having a problem getting social cues from people who are using suggested replies or using replies from an Apple Watch, where I'm asking sort of a complicated question. I might be saying something nice. Oh, I'm really, really sorry, but I thought that I was on X Street, but I'm on that street. And then I'll be about 20 minutes late. Is that okay? When I simply get a yep. Like, okay, did that person type in a phone? He's really, really pissed off, but he's sort of bottling it in. Or did he just get a notification on his wrist and a button to tap that says simply yup?
But don't you notice, Andy, that we're adjusting to that? That we're getting better,
exactly.
including in how we say yup. Like, that people understand that there's nuance in the communication, and if you type yup, now it's with the consciousness of how that might communicate. And I think we're getting used to the idea that somebody has in their pocket at all times a fully connected internet device that always knows how old any movie star is and, you know, who's married to whom this year. And so there's no mysteries anymore. So having it, I think initially it'll be weird.
Well, and I think,
but I think eventually we'll expect people to have this instant.
There's also this constant bionics. This constant transition. Bionics. Yeah, there's this constant transition that we move away from. You know, we used to be able to make fires, and now we don't know how to do that anymore. Then it was a match. Then it was like, well, why would you make a fire?
Right.
And the you know, and I think that we're getting into this situation. I know with my calendar, I got really good at using iCal. Like, I don't try to remember anything. Yeah, I don't remember anything.
No, I put it all in the calendar.
If I want to buy things, as I think about them, I put them into a shopping list, and when I go to Whole Foods, it's like there.
That's how I use drafts. I have it as a complication on my watch, and anytime I agree to do something or want something, I just do it there, and at the end of the day, I can absorb it.
It literally is bionics that's not implanted inside us. It's bionics that we're wearing now. But eventually, it's going to be. Yeah. Yeah.
But what's crazy is that I've learned that part of my brain died away. I used to have.
I can't drive anymore. I'm so dependent on GPS. I have no idea how to get anywhere.
But here's the wonders of bionics: is that you're right. I cannot find anything anymore without a GPS. But I see so much.
You lost your car, dude.
I did at the liquor store. I wasn't drinking.
Showtime.
Anyway.
I lost my car at the liquor store.
Yes. Sounds like a Don McLean song.
Yes. What's interesting is that
Chevy Malibu car. Left it.
I think that what's interesting, though, is that I explore much more of the world. If I'm in.
Used to drive, if but I'm in, I don't know more because of the six pack of corns.
Yeah.
But
my babies.
Okay, we get the
idea. But I see so much more of the world because I have GPS. You know, I see so much more of Tokyo or Rome or Paris because,
that's right.
because I just walk out there. You know, like I'm just going to walk around and when I can't quite figure it out, I'll look down and I'll walk around. You know, and so you explore a lot more because you can do it. But then on the other side, you can't figure
out. But I bet we're one of the first generations that can have this experience because normally this stuff takes generations, right? Right. Here we are. This is happening every few years.
Yeah, it's just accelerating.
We don't know how to dial a phone, or we don't know how to drive a car. We don't know how to light a fire. I think we're one of the, maybe the first generation in human history that has to adjust to these changes so rapidly all the time.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's never been quite so rapid, but there's always been that sort of like there was a first generation that had the ability to initiate a conversation with somebody without being face to face with them. So what is the cultural etiquette?
That's right.
And there's a parallel to that. One of the biggest difficulties I had when chat software first became available was I'm used to salutation. Acknowledgement that salutation has been received, conversation, end of conversation, acknowledgement that conversation has been ended. And it took me a while to retrain my brain to simply allow that.
Yo, Andy.
Say, I'm going away from the keyboard right now. Goodbye. Thank you for this conversation. It's okay for conversation to simply end. This is why we have the social programming that is always in flux and it's being affected by not technology, but changes in how we choose to interface with each other.
And there's some of it that I think we lose. You know, I have some friends in Africa that if you text them or you call them, there is like 15 minutes of how's the family. Right. And you tell them there's a whole this whole back and forth. And literally, you cannot have the conversation without it. Like it's not like a possibility to you know it will be it would. It's not that they would be insulted; they just won't allow it to happen. Like they'll just keep on asking you about how the family is until you solve all those issues. You know, and when I'm in a rush, I'm really upset about it. I'm like, but I have to admit, it's quite nice.
Yeah,
it's quite. It's not a bad thing.
I look
thing.
Forward to.
I like that.
Going somewhere where that is kind of more the mode.
No, it's quite nice.
Life is a little bit calmer.
A more civil universe.
Yeah, civil. Much more civil.
Yeah. We're all really getting the job done.
Oftentimes, yeah. Losing the little humanity that it's quite nice.
Calling cards. When it's not a card that has your name and address and contact. It's just simply a card with your name on it that indicates that, yes, I paid a call to you early today. I left this with your servant. And there used to be this whole it's insane the way these calling cards used to work, where then there became this sort of like social code that if a certain corner was folded, it meant that I was just fulfilling a social obligation. I'm not expecting you to actually invite me.
Really? Code with that? That's
exactly.
Cool.
Because this was again just a physical thing that said, yes, I was actually here to actually call on you. It's the sort of thing I had to read three times to understand that, yes, this is actually how people used to work.
Well, now, like, my only thing is that my cards are always black and white so that they're scanned easily. Like you know, I and they're all clear text, you know, clear sans serif text, you know, because I scan people's cards, and so I never want to, like, when people give me a black card with like gray text, I'm like, I'm gonna have to type this in, dang it.
I need to get some calling cards printed up.
Yeah, and it has to look old.
That's
why
I paid a call.
It should look like old.
Yeah. So I'll tell you one thing. Oh, yeah, look at this. On the first visit to a household, a gentleman gave one card to each lady of the house. A married man. Me too. A married man had a medium-sized card, while an unmarried man had a smaller card. Men's cards were always smaller than women's. When calling upon the lady of the house, if she was not home, but her daughter was, the gentleman sent in his card and departed, of course, because you can't. And here's so a visit in person, as opposed to being sent by a servant, the right upper-hand corner was turned down. A congratulatory visit, the left-hand corner. A condolence visit, the left-hand lower corner. Taking leave, if you were going on a long trip, the right-hand lower corner. This is the art of manliness. This is actually literally theartofmanliness.com. This is amazing.
It just goes to show you would know if time. We always imagine that if we had a time machine, we went back. Well, we've got all this fancy technology; they wouldn't understand. We would not understand the concept of a calling card because it is so buried in the society programming that we don't have access to that.
Now I want to write a Victorian novel that has without any explanation. all of this. He clearly bent the left corner of the card. I'll tell you one thing I'm not adjusting to.
The departure of the Macintosh. I'm so sad.
I feel like we're really coming up against this one. Now there's an article that says, this is again from the esteemed Wall Street Journal, Apple's next laptops could be more iPhone than Mac. This is Christopher Mims. This is an older article. This is probably what Phil Schiller was responding to when he was saying, you know, we're not going to merge Mac OS.
No.
But on the other hand, we've seen Intel really stumbling. We've seen the ascendancy of ARM. It's clear that Apple's going to be doing an ARM.
I think that an ARM for the MacBook, I think the ARM makes total sense. I think that the MacBook Pro
is. My understanding is that it will not be any more disruptive to anybody than Classic to Carbon to Cocoa was.
Right.
And that it'll be different. Like people who were classic Mac people, it took a while to warm up to that Cocoa stuff, that crazy next technology that Apple brought in. What's that all about? But after a while, that became Mac. And we're going to go through a transition where we get ARM at the low end, probably a hybrid in the mid-range, and probably still Xeon in the top range because there's not a real ARM solution for that yet. And we'll have a new generation of app technology that leverages everything that's gone into UIKit. And it'll feel weird at first, but then at a certain point, a few years from now, that'll just feel like Mac again.
And well, and I think that also you're going to see a lot of, you know, now that you're going to be able to run your iOS apps, you know, on your Mac, you're going to, there's going to be kind of this merging of your experience. So
Aaron Dilger's article, an Apple Insider, saying the new Mac OS Mojave optimizes the Mac for iOS users, not PC switchers.
That's a generational thing. I mean, previously, Apple's biggest concern was getting everybody who had a PC onto a Mac, and now their biggest concern is getting everybody who has an iPhone or an iPad onto it. I mean, that is the low-hanging fruit in terms of more Mac customers.
So you think this is true, the trend?
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Andy.
We have a race condition. I'm going to give it to Andy here. Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I don't think that Apple is really concerned about switching over people from the PC. I think they discovered or planned that the solution to that problem was to create something that was not a PC that PC users would prefer, and that is iOS, articulated on the iPhone and on the iPad. However, I really do think there's going to be a larger distinction between consumer grade Macs and pro grade Macs. I don't think there's any sort of an evil. We internally at Apple. We hate the Mac. We wish we didn't have
to support
the Mac.
Oh God, no! I don't think so.
No, I don't. But nonetheless, I do think, and I've said this before, so I'll say this in a very short way, that I do think that Apple just loves and adores iOS. And when they think about the future of computing, the future of the company, they don't think about Mac OS, they think about iOS. And so I don't think that their instinct is going to be to continue to evolve Mac OS in the same way that other operating systems have evolved in the past 5 or 10 years. So I think that the professional apps are going to pretty much stay on the same kind of hardware and the same sort of experience. But I would be surprised if 5 years from now, Mac OS were as recognizable to us today as simple new user interface elements. I think it's going to be a beefier version of iOS as opposed to an enhanced version of Mac OS, in appearance anyway.
And I don't think they're trying to transition iOS to Mac. I think they're just trying to make it easier for us that have iOS apps that we really wish we could use on our Mac when we're not doing that or being able to open up in a corner or do whatever. I think they're just making it better for us, a better experience for people who cross over. I don't think they care if anybody buys a Mac. I mean, that already uses iOS. I mean, they're already a user. I think that I think they used to, but I don't think that now it matters. Or it won't matter for much longer. I do agree with Andy that I think that the lower end of the Mac, I think, will be very iOS-y. I think the high end of the Mac will probably stay in the current format for the next 5, maybe 10 years.
There's also, I mean, like the stuff that Mac OS X is currently built on is Next technology. And if you look at the Mac today, it's not that dissimilar from what Next was running 20 years ago. And AppKit has been updated, but AppKit has not been updated at the rate that iOS has. And that's just a function of the amount of effort you need to put into a platform that's run by a billion people rather than tens of millions of people. And it would be good for both platforms if they sort of both got the best of everything. And once you start bringing iOS. I mean, they made that point. They said you have the traditional AppKit apps, you have web apps, you have OpenGL, now Metal apps, there'll probably be Vulkan apps at some point running on the Mac, and each of them serves a different purpose. And running UIKit apps on the Mac, you'll sort of get the best of the huge library of titles you have on iOS, but also UIKit, it comes from the same core technology, but it's just a much more modern. It's like if you could have done AppKit over again. And at some point you do, because it won't take you any further. And they're going to have to do UIKit. UIKit is like 12 years old now already, and you've got to keep modernizing these things. And I think if they do this right, and it's always a huge if, we'll get the best of a modern Apple framework for both platforms to run on. And yeah, it'll probably bias towards iOS just because we're becoming more mobile. Just everything is more mobile. iPhones, iPads, MacBooks outsell desktop Macs by a huge amount. We're becoming a mobile society, but I think both platforms will definitely benefit from being on the same page.
Well, Apple's kind of like a parent. Loves both its kids equally, but it has a favorite.
Yeah, you know.
Well, and also, you look at married with kids, and one's Taylor Swift.
It likes its youngest.
On Christmas, one kid gets the bicycle, the other kid gets the cardboard box the bicycle came in.
You want that bad. I hope, while you're complaining.
No, but one kid is married with kids and established, and the other kid is Taylor Swift, and it's hard to manage. Like, they don't need the same amount of management.
Well, and you know, like, I look at my kids are very familiar with the iOS, and they do fine on a PC, they do fine on a Mac, they do okay, but they don't really understand.
It's easier for them. Of course it is.
But what's funny is they don't really understand file structure. Like, it's something that you have to really talk about, like where to put your files, because it's just not something that they think about. They just, you know, they just get what they need within their app. And that's an interesting, to me, that was the biggest thing, is like not thinking about, no, sometimes there's some of us that don't think about where to put our files yet either, you know. But
I've seen your desktop. Yeah, it's all on the desktop.
It's only on the desktop for a little while. And then it gets sorted away.
Let's take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about Apple's plans for TV. But first, a word from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Only Quicken Loans could do this. Let's talk about buying a house for a minute. You know, it takes a while. I remember we searched for a house for a long time before we found just the right one, made some offers on some. The problem is, it can be, you know, I mean, in a way, the house hunting process is fun, but it can be agonizing because as you're looking, interest rates, particularly now, might be ratcheting up, and that home is going to cost you more and more and more. That's why you're going to love the new Rocket Mortgage Power Buying Process from Quicken Loans. Here's how it works. Quicken Loans verifies, as always, your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours. They'll give you a verified approval. By the way, verified approval is like being a cash buyer. It means that the seller knows you're good for it, but that when your offer comes in, this is a genuine offer. You've already got the money. Now, once you're verified, then you qualify for, this is the new thing, the all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They'll lock up your rate for 90 days while you shop. If rates go up, no problem. The rate doesn't. Here's a nice feature, though. If the rate goes down, yes, your rate does go down. Either way, you win. So you're guaranteed it's not going to cost you more than this during the entire home buying process. That's really huge, and it's exactly the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's largest and best mortgage lender. To get started, it's simple. As always, go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Rate Shield approval is valid only on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support. Always love seeing the good work that the information does. That's why I subscribe to the information. And they broke an interesting story a few days ago, an exclusive Apple Eyes streaming bundle for TV, music, and news.
Shocked.
And we need it. There's subscription fatigue is real, Leo. You can't just subscribe to everything. It gets so expensive.
Remember, they're beefing up Apple News. They acquired Texture. They've made deals with Oprah and a bunch of other people to make content.
They have Apple Music.
As a first step toward the new offering, this, by the way, I should give credit to Jessica Tunkel, who's writing this in the information. Apple's expected to launch a digital news subscription service next year. The service would combine Apple News with a magazine subscription service acquired by Apple in March, Texture. As a next step, so this is all kind of distant future, Apple's looking to bundle the digital news subscription with video content it's begun producing. So that might be a year off. And, of course, your Apple Music subscription. It's unclear when Apple will unveil a new subscription offering, she writes. The company would also continue to allow subscribers to... Now, this is important, to sign up for each separately. So you didn't have to buy the bundle, but the bundle will be available. You could still say, I just want Apple Music. I think that's actually pretty smart. And it's what you... Yeah. I think, Alex, you've been saying this. That's what they would do all along.
It just makes sense to just say, oh, I want to pay $15 a month or $20 a month or whatever that number is. I think if it goes over $20 a month or, well, $30, I think is probably the outer edge of what you'd get for solving all your content needs.
Probably $10 separately, so together $20 or $25 or whatever.
Yeah, I think $20. I think if you got up to above $30, you'd have a problem.
No, that's too much. $20, I would do.
$20, I think would be easy. $15 would be like holy smokes.
Texture is $10. The music is $10.
Yeah.
If you threw in news and movies, and it was still $20.
Oh man,
that's a good price.
That's
right?
A great price.
And their TV offering is minimal because again, they have no back catalog the way Netflix and other companies do.
Right.
And if they beta, the real strength there would be to beta it with the music, you know, the tens of millions of people they already have in music, you know, say we're going to give it to you all for, you know,
so Apple, of course, declined to comment, but the Jessica says her sources inside Apple are telling her this is something they're looking at.
It kind of makes sense that they'd be looking at the success of the Amazon Prime model and saying, well, what if you give us a fixed amount of money every month and we just give you a boatload of features and we keep adding to those features as we keep going on, but we don't charge you $90 to start and keep upping it every few years.
Because, I mean, people are happy to pay Amazon Prime for $90 a year.
So if it's an attractive package, Amazon got me because it wasn't any one specific thing. It was just the idea of look at all that I get for this annual fee, and the fact that it wasn't here's X dollars a month you're spending on this that you might be using this month, you might not be using. If I just simply accept that I'm going to be spent, this is part of my yearly budget. It's just sort of easy to swallow. So you think about what are people's biggest complaints about Apple services, and one of them is this really, really stingy amount of storage you get on iCloud. Well, what if as part of this package you were getting music, you were getting TV, but you were also getting 500 gigabytes of iCloud storage and a really good rate every time you wanted to increase it, particularly if you wanted to increase it so that you could back up an iOS device?
One of the things I think is going to be, I think it's going to affect all the prices for all of these things is that, you know, I think that where these companies that wanted to get rid of net neutrality want to go, I don't think they're really going to attack the little guy trying to get their video service off the ground, because you can't get a video service off the ground even before net neutrality because of peering. Like, you had to pay a lot of money to peer anyway. There was no neutrality.
Don't you love it that, I mean, it's already, I've got new caps, we've got new expenses. AT&T, which swore it would lower prices when it merged with Time Warner, has raised DirecTV's price by $5.
Why all the time?
It's already just, I mean, they didn't even have the grace to wait a little bit.
Let us sink in.
Great, we're in now, baby.
Well, I think that one of the things that I think a lot of them want to do is zero rate. They want to force Apple, Netflix, Google, Facebook to zero rate against your Comcast subscription. So your Comcast subscription will get capped. Let's say it's going to be at 200 gigs or 100 gigs a month. But Apple and Netflix and Google and all these other folks will pay to zero rate against that, so that you're not.
They pay Comcast.
They'll pay Comcast.
And so Comcast says,
doesn't
and
count.
Its customers are so happy. Because they get it for free. It doesn't cost me extra.
It doesn't cost you extra. So what happens, though, is that you'll think about everything else of... You know, so they're not going to charge the little guy to get access.
No, they charge the big companies.
They're going to make billions on the big companies to zero rate their services. I think that's what's probably happening. And part of it is that there is a lot of complexity. I mean, 5G is going to be the most expensive rollout ever, and it is going to. But you're never going to think about. A lot of people are never going to have. They're never going to have a router at home. They're just going to have 5G.
Right.
And they're going to go home. They're going to go wherever they go, and it's just 5G.
That's what, about five years out before we see the end of home networks entirely?
I mean, there'll be a handful of us that are geeky that want our own routers.
That's
got to
scare Comcast. It's one of the reasons Comcast is trying to get in the wireless business.
Right? Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is for the sole cable operators. This is the end. I mean, they have to move to they have to figure out the wireless solution, because the cable operator, the cell phone operators are... A, they have to make more money because they are going to, and they're going to build a lot of other things. They're going to build high speed internet for professionals. So people like me will most likely get, you know, our own lines. So like right now, when you take a live view to a concert, You know, I've got 6 modems and they still won't work. Yeah, that won't be a problem with 5G. You know, they'll charge us thousands of dollars a month so that we can not have to interact with the general population.
Here's the weirdest story of the week. Lego and iPhone connect for low-cost nerve gas detector. Worried about sarin and VX? Make your own.
I've often thought about. I wonder if Nevada will be attacked by nerve gas.
Isn't Disney in there? I mean, that's just one.
Disney ought to be involved, huh?
In a related story, a lot of researchers have been feeding like thousands and thousands of news headlines to a machine learning program to create fake news headlines. And I think this is one of the results.
Is this one of them?
I'm clicking on it.
Researchers at the University of Texas Austin have come up with a simple way to detect and identify nerve agents. And so they built this with an iPhone and Lego bricks because you need a chamber, a chemical sensor in a chamber that changes colors and brightness to indicate which nerve agents are present, how concentrated they are. Unfortunately, it could be difficult to see differences in the level of fluorescence with the naked eye in the field. So they made this little thing out of Lego.
There's some TV show where they go, is there a Legoland anywhere nearby? Yeah, I just don't know what's going to happen here. We got to build.
It uses the iPhone's camera to photograph and analyze the sensor's results. University of Texas graduate student Alexander Bulgakov created this. Software is available on GitHub. Can be adapted for other operating systems. But they did.
This was part of a drunken bet. I bet.
I bet you can't make a. Chemistry professor Eric Anslin said, "Chemical weapons are dangerous threats to humanity. Detection and neutralization are key to saving lives. And now, thanks to..." No, he didn't say this. "Thanks to Lego and iPhone, you too can be safe." I love... I don't know. It's not link bait. It's true. But it's probably not something coming soon to a store near you. Are you excited about Pikachu hiding behind real-world objects?
I'm excited about this technology. The occlusion technology, I think, is really cool.
Yeah. So this is something Niantic, which does, of course, the game.
Oh, and they just announced their platform, too. So there'll be a bunch of stuff powered by their engines.
Oh, really? Yeah, they did. Yeah, they started with what was the really fun game that was so complicated that they did? I can't remember now the name.
Yeah. Ingress. And they're partnering with Warner Brothers to make Harry Potter. But they're also going to make their engine available to other companies.
See, now this is AR. Look at Pikachu's climbing in a tree. He's running around. That would be cool.
That's crappy AR, though, Leo. Did you notice that he kept climbing and running through people?
Yeah, he ran through people. So this, with the occlusion technology.
Ghost Pikachu.
Look at that. He's running around behind plants. He knows where people are. Wow, that is pretty cool. I'd be playing more Pokemon.
The tracking isn't very good in that example.
Well, no, the tracking isn't good, but the occlusion technology.
Yeah, the occlusion is great, but the tracking is surprisingly bad. And it's got a lot of detail there to grab onto. I don't quite understand.
Okay, which Pokemon is that one? Is it it's a fox?
Oh no, that's Eevee. That's the one that evolves into all the different
Eevee
types. Like
I have an Eevee.
Vaporeon and Flareon and Jolteon and Leon.
Yeah. You know way too much about this stuff.
Leo, the Pokemon topic is almost as popular as iPhone on iMore these days.
I'm playing it again, thanks to you, you son of a...
There's like 100,000 people in Germany over the weekend for their Safari Park event. That's crazy for a digital game.
It's back, baby. It's really fun to play. I gotta start walking more so I can catch more stuff. Gotta catch them all.
Walking is great.
How many kilometers... Oh, look. I gotta get some stuff. Hold on, I'll be back with you. There's a few.
And it's also like I used to live inside, and I get in a car and I drive somewhere, and now I go out and I walk and I meet my neighbors and I meet people in my area, and I have a ton of people that I never knew lived here that I know now, and I found all these parks that I didn't know existed that were tucked away behind other things that I would never have found except they have like a little Pokemon thing
if
there.
If it
and
didn't
I
have a
Pokestop,
would you have gone there? No.
No, and now I just go for walks and I enjoy them.
The reason I stopped playing one night. There was like a night that I decided I'm not going to play Pokemon anymore. And that was, because I loved it and everything else, but it was the middle of the night and I was in Istanbul at Hagia Sophia Temple.
Oh, and you were playing Pokemon Go?
No, I wasn't playing. Oh. I wasn't playing. I was walking around with a friend of mine there and it was like middle of the night and we were walking down.
Beautiful.
Just this most amazing thing to see. Oh, and there was a whole bunch of people crowded over at the, like right next to it. They're all crowded around.
They're
all
looking at pomegranate.
And I walked
juice.
Over and they were like, no, they were playing Pokemon. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like this is gone. Like I just decided I can't be part of this.
I thought people were playing Pokemon and it turned out that school had started and they were all just waiting for a bus and I was terribly embarrassed.
You went over.
Hey,
and they
dudes,
were like,
y'all playing Pokemon? Oh, never mind.
What is Pokemon?
What are you talking about? But I would love to see others do stuff with Niantic. Wasn't there rumored to be a Harry Potter game that they were
doing? Yeah, that's official now. They're doing it with Warner Brothers, and you're going to be able to go and catch your Harry Potter. I think it's Strangest Creatures.
Fantastic Creatures, yeah. Well, that would be cool.
I was going to say, I thought it was going to be like Slytherin versus
Gryffindor. I bet you there will be. There will be, yeah.
Every franchise is going to get into AR gaming because it's
so much
fun. But what you really need is an AR hat. That you point at somebody and it pops on their head and it goes around.
I think Gryffindor.
And I think Disney has an AR experience now when you're at the park, when you're waiting for rides and things.
Oh, yeah, everybody's got
them,
right?
It makes so much sense, yeah.
Apple is now selling, according to iMore, I've heard of them, a smart ball that that records data as you play. This is not an Apple product, but you can get it at the Apple Store, exclusively at the Apple Store. It's called Play Impossible's Smart Game Ball. Tell me about this.
I have actually not tried it yet. I've been so out of the loop with all the iOS beta stuff. The world has passed around me, Leo. And I have not.
Well, if you've never heard of the Game Ball, it's essentially a small soccer-like ball that contains an accelerometer, barometer, microcontroller, ultracapacitor, and other super cool tech. As you play with it, it sends data via Bluetooth to the accompanying iOS app in real time. There are also modes that guide you through specific activities, allow you to compete in games with friends like Splash, a water balloon toss game, and Jostle, a version of Keep Away. What's more, Game Ball's game-oriented play goes beyond individual games. The more you play with it, the more experience points you receive. Oh, dear.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the things that's interesting about this is that I think we're going to see more sensors being added to, you know, just regular things. Like, if you think about a baseball, the feedback that you could give to someone who's learning or trying to perfect it, it would know how well you threw a curve or what your fastball was, or even give you targets to hit that were just virtual, that, you know, just small sensors inside the ball would provide. It would give you a lot of data.
No, there are already training balls like that. There are soccer balls like that that have different features on them. I'm surprised we haven't seen gameplay change by in ball sensors before. The Flying Karamazov brothers a few years ago, they teamed up with engineers from the MIT Media Lab, and they developed a set of like translucent juggling balls and pins that had like different colored lights inside them that responded to accelerometers and other data that was being fed in real time to a computer backstage, so that for a whole bunch of effects, like stage effects where you could actually see vectors being plotted on a screen behind them of where each ball is and what's being doing. But they also programmed the computer to give them like sort of games to play where the color of a club would change in midair. And because they're also wearing gloves with sensors inside them, it could tell who had caught which pin. So a pin that changes color now has to be caught by somebody that the computer knows is out of position to catch and throw that pin again. So I really, really want to see like brand new games being played. Like we never got to see what Parisi Squares was like in Star Trek. I bet it has something to do with velocity and acceleration and gravitometric sensors inside balls that basically change the rules of the game. Actually, it's not Parisi Squares. It would be more like Kelvin Ball, where the rules keep changing based on like the whims of a computer backstage.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun? All right, I only have one question. Green or purple?
Oh,
which color?
Purple. Green.
Oh, wait a minute.
Look at that purple.
One is the Hulk and one is the Hulk's pants. It's so hard to decide.
The Hulk or the Hulk's pants?
Brainiac, Luthor.
$99.95. I'm going to buy one. I'll have it by next week.
Right.
Say again?
They have a connected bicycle helmet at the Apple Store as well.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's watch these children.
Hey, can I plus?
They're playing.
Yeah, there's actually
She just bounced it off his head. That doesn't seem nice.
Do you realize that ball cost $100? Don't throw that.
Yeah, really, no kidding. So they're playing different games with it.
Charge it up before we keep going
out. Oh, you have to charge it up. Oh. Oh. I guess you would, wouldn't you?
It means regenerative. You know, what'll be interesting is also, like, could you turn that into, like, a physics class, you know, on momentum and, you know, a lot of other things as well. So hopefully they'll.
Well, did you see that ARKit demo where they were showing the, like, you put two molecules together and they created, like, and they create the substance and then you move them around and they break apart and they combine. That was so cool.
Yeah.
Let me just buy this ball. Go ahead. You two talk amongst
talk amongst yourselves about ARKit molecule demos.
Amongst yourselves.
Well, I think that, I mean, I definitely think that within a school environment, we're just getting started. And it's the hard part is just that it's expensive to get, you know, the cost of admission is high for a lot of schools. But I think that this is where it, you know, wants to go, you know, is to use a lot of these technologies to deepen people's understanding of how this stuff works.
And also for different kinds of learners, because some people do hear, like, they're audio learners, but some people are kinesthetically aware and they need to see things and interact with them. And it's impossible to do some of these things in the real world. And they can actually see it.
I think some people are better, my opinion is some people are better at reading than others, but for 2 million years, what we did is we watched other people do it, then we worked with them and did it, and then we figured it out. I mean, we're, as human beings, we're really good at, there's some people that are better at being cerebral because they've evolved, you know, into being able to read and think through it and everything else. But as a species, I think that we are being able to interact with it is how we developed for millions of years.
Still buying.
Leo, which ball? He's still buying. Which ball? Did you get one of each? Are you getting one of each?
No, no. I should get the green one. You're right, because it's a little easier to see. But I'm buying the purple one because Alex is sitting right next to me.
Not a court in the world will convict you.
Also think about how something like that could be used to map a room. I'm not even joking. Just toss it against a wall, catch it back where you are before, toss it against another wall.
I'll have it Friday, and we'll have it for the game.
I've been waiting to see if my pool thing. I'm surprised at the back. I have like a little Roomba, like, you know, for the pool.
Yeah.
And I have a very complicated pool. And so it kind of goes back and forth. And I'm like, I wonder if it's mapping it. No, it's just reacting to it. I don't think
the Roomba does make a map.
The Roomba does, but this is like
the pool Roomba may not.
Dolphin is what it's called.
It's called the Dolphin.
It's a dolphin. Yeah.
It's just, you know, a random walk probably is just as good as anything you could do if it mapped it out.
I did a time lapse of it. It's really actually quite fun.
Is it? You got it? I think I've run it somewhere. Text it to me. Yeah.
my Roomba would just be showing me, here's where all the cables and cardboard boxes and discarded pieces of clothing are on your... Here's why we couldn't actually work in your house.
I think we can go to our picks of the week. What do you say? I think we should.
You're in?
Yeah. Do you mind?
No.
Do you have any other stories that you want to talk about? Anything else you want to talk about? All right. I think we should get Rene Ritchie's pick of the week right now.
So forgive me because I did miss a couple shows. So if somebody mentioned this already, I apologize. But it is so neat. So I've been using AirPods like Alex so much that now, like, I'm using this just because I prefer wired for the show so I don't get yelled at by everybody involved. Yeah. But wireless, once you're free, you're free. And it's so great. But then you go on an airplane and you're like, oh, ho-hum, woe is me. But the people at 12 South found these little Bluetooth dongles and packaged them up ever so nicely. So it's called AirFly. It's made by 12 South. Comes with this adapter. You plug it into the 3.5 millimeter jack on your airplane if it's actually working, which sometimes it isn't. But you plug this in, and then it creates a Bluetooth connection. You connect your AirPods to it, and you are using your AirPods in the plane. And if you have to get up and go to the washroom, there's no cord. The person next to you has to get up and go to the washroom. You don't have to extricate yourself, and you can use it anywhere I use it on airplanes, but if your car, for example, has 3.5 out and you really want to use your AirPods, put it in there. Anywhere that it's a wireless adapter for a wired world.
Isn't that an ironic
statement?
Yes. We finally have to figure out a way to make the AirPods work with a headphone jack. Well, now they
don't. A dongle for the real world. You win, Apple.
It's absolutely ludicrous, but when you're sitting in the plane and you're like, the last thing I want to do is wire up a pair of headphones like a monster, and you just plug this in and you're fine.
Second one. Thank you. All right. Alex is mailing me the time lapse of his pool dolphin.
And
as soon as he's completed.
As Alex does.
As one does.
you know, in the days of the floppy disk, he could just hand you a floppy disk.
I know.
Have to get
I know.
I'll also while really we have big, a second, so I'll recommend Luke Cage season 2 on Netflix.
Is it good? I almost watched that last night.
It is amazing.
Okay.
Good the music know. Is amazing. The story is way better than season 1. Terrific.
Good to know. Okay. Andy, your pick of the week.
My main pick of the week is something really, really simple. It's the Google Play Music desktop player. Because I do use Google Play Music, and I like having it. The problem is that you have to, there is no desktop player for it. You have to actually run it inside a browser window. And number one, that might use up a whole lot more resources than you actually want. And number two, I have to figure out exactly what tab of what window this damn player is in. Whereas if I have it running as a separate app, I can simply tab over to it. It's a way to have a hovering window everywhere. It's not hugely feature bonus compared to what you're running inside the web app, but it's not simply a container for the web app. It's an open source GitHub project that's been updated for a long, long time. And so as soon as I discovered that a couple weeks ago, it has been my go-to music player for that. And I have noticed that my system seems to be running a little bit better with it partly because maybe I no longer have like 7 instances of Google Play Music app running inside different tabs inside my browser. Because I'm no longer just simply typing the URL every time I want to look at another album. There's also mobile remote controls you can download for iOS so that you can now control it from your phone. Why you wouldn't, in case you didn't initiate it from your phone to begin with. And it's free. You can just donate money for it if you want. But like I said, sometimes something doesn't have to be super complicated to be the right solution for what you wanted. This is just what I want. I just want a player that stands in its own app, in its own window, so that I can shuffle around apps, close down Chrome, and still have access to Google Play Music.
Awesome. I use it too. I'm a Google Play Music subscriber.
The app or Google Play Music?
I subscribe to Google Play Music.
I'm sorry, the player.
Yeah. Oh, no, I do use the player. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. I listen to it all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Alex Lindsay's Dolphin. You do have a complicated pool. What the hell is going on there?
I didn't.
You got tree stumps in there, and
there's just a lot of stones there.
Is that a hot tub that it's cleaning, or is it just
That's a little separate area,
little separate section there for the youngins?
Yeah.
Has anybody ever written a version of Logo for like these pool cleaners?
Oh, wouldn't
that
be fun?
The turtle is.
Yeah.
Step forward 3.
Well, this is brought to you by the pool gal. The pool gal is the person who cleans the pool, and she was like, "Your pool is crazy.
So she brought one in.
She brought one in, and now I'm going to have to get one because this thing is amazing.
See, this is good. Then you don't need a pool gal.
No, you still need it. There's like chemicals and there's
things. It's complicated.
Like,
I know.
I have no interest in being.
You asked Lisa, what do you guys do?
I still, like, the problem is right on the other side, there's a bunch of pine trees. Like, every time we swim, there's a 15-minute prop. Prep for me.
Oh, because the pine trees are dropping needles
everywhere.
Oh,
so that's why you need it.
Bad place for a pool.
Oh, but it's nice.
Oh, I know. I remember what you told Lisa. You were going to 3D print a cover.
I'm working on that. Yeah. Yeah. So that's. Well, you now understand why. You understand the
there's
problem.
No cover that will fit that odd.
No,
pool.
No. So you need
How much PLA are you going to need to make that cover, man?
Well, so I have some friends that have a ShopBot, which does 4x8 sheets. And so we're talking about whether the foam will work so that basically we can
stitch it together. No.
It's just
quilt.
Just 4x8 sheet of. Oh, no. I'm doing it for the actual hot tub area, which is still as complicated as that. It's just not in the picture. So I think I can have 2 4x8 sheets that are kind of open up.
Burke says if you spray expanding foam onto it, let it solidify. And then peel it off.
The problem with the expanding foam is you need to. I spent a lot of time, quality time, with expanding foam.
Does it float?
I've never tried to use it with water. I've only done it with computers.
Foam.
It's foam. It might work. It might actually contain and push up. It'd be really funny at the bottom because it'd be all lumpy because it would just press against the water right. Until it reached some kind of equilibrium.
Yeah.
But it's when I worked at it, my first job out of high school was shipping and receiving for an electronics company. So.
Scooter X, by the way, is saying that Independence Day 2018 will get you 15% off at 12 South for the next 48 hours. So if you want to get Renee's Bluetooth dongle.
Have some real freedom.
Yeah. Independence Day 2018, all one word.
There you go.
Real independence.
Yeah. Happy. I don't know what it is about this time of year, but everybody's doing sales. This is a good time to shop around because everybody's selling stuff for Amazon Prime Days next week. Mm-hmm. It's just a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the in between. They're like, we got to do something. Christmas is still 6 months away.
Yeah.
People are spend outdoors having fun.
They're not. Gosh darn it! Get shopping, kids. Get out of the beach.
You should be inside, vulnerable to the self doubts that we fill you with that make you want to fill a void with consumer products. Don't go splashing about the ocean with your friends and family.
Mr. Alex Lindsay, it's time for your pick of the week.
So This is have you seen Audio Kit Synth 1?
No, but it sounds like something I'd want.
Yes. A special thank you to David Biedney, who was the one that recommended it on Facebook. And it is addicting. It is free, open source. And just there are so many layers. Like if you start to. So you have. Let's see if I. I don't think I have it.
I could show this on the screen. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Is the audio? Turn it all the way up. I'll mic it.
Why is that? See, of course, it's not a.
Not working.
Hold on.
It's not working.
See, now it's not working. I'm sure that my
it's too complicated.
No, my computer is like it's probably connected to some web.
So when they say ROM headphone. Player, what does that mean? ROM player is it playing sample?
It's playing sample. It's a full on synthesizer. I'm just trying to figure out why.
Can you play the intro from the final countdown on this? That's all anybody needs to know.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't want to test it while we were.
It's the final countdown.
Or Bohemian Rhapsody, that little jam.
I'm wondering whether it's using audio somewhere else.
So this is an open source project, which is kind of interesting.
It's
open source sample player app code. Built with AudioKit Pro is a leading open source audio framework powering millions of app installs. Wow. Apple Design winner, Fortune 100, is lovingly used by startups, indie developers, Apple Design Award winners, and even Fortune 100 companies. It's completely free and open source. So that's the kit, but then there's an app. This is ROM Player that you downloaded. Is that the app?
This is AudioKit Synth 1.
AudioKit Synth 1.
And you can download it. It's
there it is. Okay.
It's free on the...
Full-featured, free and open source Pro iPad synthesizer built with AudioKit.
And of course...
Nice.
Of course, the thing is, last time I used it before I got here, my daughter had it. And she is...
Well, let me play a video. Let's just play a short video with audio.
For the past 2 years, we've had a crazy dream. The dream of creating the world's first free and open source professional synth for the iPad.
It's free. It's cool.
No ads, no in-app purchases, nothing to buy. This is going to be free for everyone. But building something like this wasn't easy.
No, look
at it. Over 100 people volunteered their time, including sound designers from the biggest names in music and app developers who have sold hundreds of thousands of apps in the App Store. But why do we need this? There was something I learned that shocked me. There's millions of people in the world with iPads that can't even afford $5 or $10 for a music app. Millions of people receive free iPads from schools and other charity organizations. Many don't even have credit cards, putting even a 99-cent app out of reach. It's a humbling and exciting experience.
It's Matthew
This
Fetcher.
Has been a labor of love with no financial sponsors. We built this without any Kickstarters or any financial investors. So many people worldwide have donated their time and effort to make this beautiful sounding app. The outpouring of support has been wonderful.
You're right.
We're so grateful. Over 12,000 people have signed the mailing list to get the app when it comes out.
Look at the app where I look at it and I say, I can't afford
iOS
this app.
Music apps
yeah,
of all
exactly.
Time.
It is
no
so
pressure
deep.
On us, right?
All right, keep on opening up things.
Let me make some music. Get presets. Oh, I got to give them. Presets are free, but you have to give them your email. That's okay. I don't mind giving them my email. What could possibly go wrong? They could read it. That's correct. Bonus presets have been added to Bank A. Wow, that was easy. All right, so you turn it up all the way, and now I have a keyboard.
There you go.
That's kind of cool. Tell me what to do here.
All right, so
I'm in the 80s already.
Yeah, but it's more of a...
Oh, you just press and hold. It's very 80s, isn't it? Wow, this is cool. This is a reason to get an iPad, frankly. Oh, I see.
Eyeliner and a red skinny tie.
He's playing across the top. Yeah. It took so long to write it, it's now not hip anymore.
Anyway.
This is neat.
It is, and you just keep on going, and then you keep on playing with it, and then you go, what? Like, there'll be something else.
But I see, think giving this to your little daughter and letting her mess with it is great.
Loved it.
With headphones. Yeah. With headphones.
With headphones, yes. I'll be taking this to play along with the fireworks tomorrow.
But I literally, I downloaded it right before I got on a plane, and it's lost like 2 hours there just like, because there are so many dials.
Yeah.
And you can just sit there and just kind of just goof around with it and play with it. I haven't made anything that I would record, but it's just an incredible amount. I mean, it is... I cannot believe that it's free, you know, and
can you
I think
record?
That,
I mean, can it be saved?
I haven't tried. So
oh,
I,
yeah,
like, literally,
save.
It's like a game. You can
save.
You can
that
save the
saves
settings.
The wave, saves the settings. It'd be fun to save the...
I'm sure you can.
Save the music.
But I think that...
all notes have been turned off. Oh, she hit MIDI panic. No, no.
It might have been panic. Hold on.
I like any synthesizer. I could just hold one key. And
no, mine's working now. I restarted it, so it was...
That's really cool.
Anyway.
That's really cool. So that's free, amazingly.
You should... All I can say is that if you have an iPad, run, don't walk, just go get it. I mean, it doesn't cost you anything.
Audio kit, Synth 1.
And it's just so much fun, and you just kind of dig into it, and I think every kid should definitely have this, you know, on it just to kind of... explore that process. So
we have had fun today, haven't we? Yes, we
do.
We have.
Yes, we have. Tomorrow I will bring you a calling card, and I will bend a corner.
Bend the left corner.
But what corner I bend, I haven't decided.
Two corners, then I know that one of us shall be dead upon the morrow.
Oh dear. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Andy Iannatko, Iannatko on the Twitter and iannatko.com on the internet. Wonderful to have you, Andy. We'll look for
you on
WBUR soon, yes?
GBH.
The competitor. Crosstown competitor.
We're both, just because we're both public radio doesn't mean we can't hate each other. No, they're fine.
Well,
they're wonderful.
Fiercely
they're
competitive
wild.
For Andy.
It's because Ben Brock Johnson's on the show regularly too, and he's at BUR, so it's great. We got Boston Public Radio sewn up here at Twit. Great to have you always, Andy. Anywhere else you want to plug or talk about?
Not yet, but maybe sometime something soon.
Look for his diner pictures on Flickr. Andy I. Alex Lindsay, you'll find him on the Twitter too. AlexLindsay. He's a Say or pixelcore.com. Anything you got coming up?
I am going to be on this awesome show this weekend called The New Screensavers.
You're going to be my co-host?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So I'm fishing out there for questions. So if people have specific questions for me, probably video.
I will
or
have
whatever.
My purple ball.
Oh, yeah. We'll play the purple
on Saturday.
We'll play with the purple ball.
We'll play the ball game.
And we've got some stuff. We did some scanning and we took some behind the scenes video of that. So we should have some fun stuff to show. So it should be a good time.
Yeah. Lots of fun. Yeah. Renee Ritchie, when he's not playing Pokemon. And by the way, both Renee and I have maxed out at 200 friends. Sorry.
Yes. All right.
We are creating a waiting list, however.
Oh, God, this is a Tennessee Williams play. Oh, many gentlemen callers did I have that day. We had to borrow chairs from the other house.
He is at imore.com, where he writes extensively about Mac and iOS and Pokemon and anything else that a geek would be interested in. And he does the Vector podcast there as well. Anything else you want to plug?
No, I have a brand new video up about maps. So if you go to youtube.com/vectorshow, I'll tell you all about the new maps.
Understand all of the stuff we were talking about today.
And why it matters.
Well, I've got a wild gulpin to capture, so.
Do it.
I think this will be a time for me to say thank you all for joining us. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday right after iOS Today. That usually is around 11 a.m. Pacific. It'll be 2 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC. If you want to stop by, please do say hi. You can also join us in the studio. We had a nice studio audience up from Irvine visiting. Just email tickets at twit.tv. We'll put a chair out for you. The live feed is at twit.tv/live. The chat room is irc.twit.tv. And if you want to download audio or video of any of our shows, the website is twit.tv. And for this show, twit.tv/MBW. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcatcher. Just look for Mac Break Weekly. That way you'll get it the minute it's available every day, every Tuesday. Thanks so much for watching. We'll see you next time. Now back to work, my friends, because as you know, break time is over.